It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 21st of July 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday, the 21st of July, Sharon Brown talked to the On Saturday the 21st of July, Sharon Brown talked to Jo Holmes from the Waiheke Local Board and she found out about the new ferry initiative, the Waiheke Navy.
I'm back on air again with Jo Holmes, Transport Spokesman on the Community Board. Hi Jo, how are you doing?
I'm great actually, thanks very much indeed Sharon, it's great. Nice to be here.
So we've just been having a little chat and Jo hasn't been on since when she was standing for election, is that right?
That's right.
So you've been in how long now?
Just over 18 months.
Lovely.
Just a little bit more than halfway through the term.
Great, okay. So what are some of the, is it as you expected?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer because it's such a time of change and a state of flux. Some parts of it are, some parts of it are not. I think the part that's not as I expected really was the workload. The workload is very heavy. Mm. I'm doing about 30 to 35 hours a week.
Crikey.
So by and large,
it's supposed to be a sort of a 15 hour a week.
Well, that's, I think they said 20 hours, I think, right. it was the sort of advertising that went with the job. But, if I'm doing 30 to 35 hours, I know Faye's doing 50 to 60. Mm. So it is a huge commitment and, it's very hard for the people who've got jobs to maintain them as well. Mm. So it's a lot.
Well, that's why it's also like a huge ask for people, because, and also I guess you have to be in a certain stage of life that you can either, you're not working too much or you've got a job that's not demanding.
I think that's actually a real worry. I think it's a real worry for democracy. It shouldn't be that the only people who can afford to be on local boards are people who are either retired or have basically got the time, because the remuneration is so small that it doesn't attract younger people who've really high calibre. We've got some wonderful people on the island, for example, but they can't exist on the money that's available.
Yeah. Are there plans to change that?
No.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's really
We've tried
tricky.
To give feedback. In fact, we have given feedback to that extent, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon.
Okay. And what are the things you've enjoyed the most about the job?
Learning. I can really answer that one straight away. I've just absolutely adored getting in, feet and all, into all of the different elements that make up the Auckland Council, especially being in at the opening, really, of a whole new chapter. Mm. It's just been amazing. We are making it up as we go along, and that's the honest to God truth of the matter. Nobody was sure what local boards are, what powers they have, what differences there with community boards. So it's been exciting to be part of, making a new council. And that's also why it's so time-consuming, because there's just so much to do, not only on our own side over here, but we have we're part of the council itself, and we have co-governance model. So we've got to be aware of all of the bigger aspects that are going on over in Auckland, the wider aspects in the region as well. Mm. And at the same time, we need to start fostering relationships with other local boards, so that we're not necessarily speaking with one voice, but It does help, actually, if the local boards are united on having a greater say for their communities. Because,
so are there certain initiatives that you've worked on with other local boards that
not per se, but in general, we try and work across through the Chairs Forum, which is a very powerful forum, get our more unitary view of local board issues, so that we can put those up to the governing body.
Mm. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
And what have been some of the things you're a bit like, oh God, is there anything like that? I know.
I said in the paper recently, the thing that possibly surprised me, although it shouldn't be a surprise, but it really did surprise me, I guess, was that people felt that they could be abusive.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody who puts their hand up to do that kind of work does it out of a sense of community. And whatever else, even if people don't agree with what you do, it shouldn't leave room for people to feel that they can be abusive to you.
Mm.
And I found that a challenge. I have.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I don't know if it's. Yeah. I don't know what that is. People do generally seem to feel that it's okay. And I noticed that on especially things like Facebook sites as well, that there seems to be a real sort of, big free-for-all of saying things that are really inappropriate.
I couldn't agree more. And I don't go onto those Facebook sites.
No, I'm actually quite keen to come off them.
Yeah, I honestly, this is a real serious comment I'm about to make. I think they're seriously bad for your health.
Yeah, well, what about that, actually?
And funnily enough, there are people. There was an article, I think it was in last week's Herald, saying exactly that. That there's now clinical studies being done on the effects of Facebook and on websites and use of the internet and people on there 38 hours a week. And you can sort of see that, I think, on those some of those community sites where people are, they're just rattling things backwards and forwards all the time. So I'm told, because I have to be told this, because I don't want to go and have a look at it, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I think it's sort of compounded by the fact that a lot of the people who are posting up on Facebook, which is a particular kind of relationship with other people, are also seeing each other within the community. So in some ways, potentially, it's more hurtful.
Yeah.
Because it's not just an anonymous blob on the other side of the world. It's actually someone in your community, and then you're making quite personal comments about them.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of the Wild West. Seriously. Anything goes. It's a free-for-all. And there are some good aspects to that, but there is also an aspect which is very, very dangerous, and particularly for young people, I think.
Yeah.
Cyberbullying amongst youth is a real problem, real problem, and it leads to suicide. So, it's not something that we can take lightly.
No, that's true. Although, I do like that comment on the Wild West. God, you can make such a good film on that, couldn't you? Because I often feel that way with, I'm part of a local co-op that, gets organic food, and I often feel like this pioneer, because I come home every couple of weeks with my sack full of raisins and my 5 kg bag of sugar I like that. That's a good idea. Okay, right, great. So a couple of things that I'm quite interested in talking to you about are Matiatia and the Esplanade,
right?
And those are both things that fall within this sort of transport spokesperson portfolio.
Yes.
The thing about Matiatia is I'm quite there's been some sort of consultation around what's going on down there. So what is going on with Matiatia? What is the consultation about, and what's your vision for that whole area?
Okay. I don't know that I particularly have a vision for the area per se. I mean, I would like to see that the traffic flowed a lot better down there, and that we take some of the pinch points out that are causing some sort of crises to happen down there. I mean, the competition for space is huge. We've got an increasing number of tourist operators, especially obviously in the tourist season, and all of this is really putting heavy demands on each of those areas. Also, the commuters feel that they're being pushed further and further out by being going out to the Okanaki car park, and their needs are less and less met. And perhaps for me, the biggest thing is that we're not looking ahead. The population of the island keeps increasing, and by my calculations, each year since they last did surveys, we've probably needed an additional 10 or 11 car parks down there to cater for the 120 or so people each year that are added to the island. And I think that's one of the reasons we're getting the parking problems. It's just simply demand. There's just not enough space. And on top of that, you've got the gold card holders now who, because we've got an aging population, more and more people is getting the gold card. People who have come to live over here and retire over here are taking up the old batches that used to be, still are largely, but a lot of those are now being taken up by families arriving on the island. So the demand is just going up and up and up, and there is really no plan to cater for that. And I'm tempers afraid. I get calls certainly every week from people saying I'm very frustrated with the parking down there, and I agree with them. I agree entirely.
And so what specific problems are they identifying in terms of parking?
Oh, the biggest one, really. I mean, the commuters don't like walking the 15 minutes downhill, but that's really not the issue. By the time 9 o'clock comes round, the car parks are full now. They didn't used to be in the $6 car park. It used to be even a year ago that by and large you could get a place there after 9 o'clock. But now if you go down at 10, you might be lucky to get a place at all, and then people are missing ferries. So all in all, it's not working as it should as our transport hub.
Okay, and so what are some of the solutions that you see as
Well, we already have plans that were drawn up prior to the new council, and they're still available for people to look at. But obviously we have such a big change down there. We've got two CCOs running the land down there, the Auckland Council Properties Limited and Auckland Transport, and they're charged with making the best use of their assets. So they too are looking at the whole of the large area of land that was purchased by the City Council. I think it was in 2003, might have been 2006, I can't quite remember the date, but they're looking at that whole land and seeing how that they can get the best use of those assets. Hence they're doing a uses analysis to try and inform themselves about how it's being used down there and look at the whole thing and see if they can't utilise it better. So that's one element that's driving it. And the other element that's driving it is the visitors. Our population goes up to about 35,000 at some of the peak summer times. Just not enough room again, especially in the keyhole.
Okay. So that's quite interesting because I understood that it was around the using the space there in a slightly different way.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, but I'm quite interested because there seems to be almost a sort of a push to develop things down there. Is that right, or is that in my imagination?
Yeah, you have to go back to a little bit of history here. When that land was purchased at great expense, I think it was something like $11 million. Obviously, Auckland Council at that time looked to see how they could recoup the money. And then there was they thought they'd build apartments there, maybe a retail complex down there, all of which has really gone out of the window now. They got that message strongly and clearly that they see this now as a blank sheet of paper down at Martyrtyr, which I think presents us with a great opportunity to achieve the sort of outcomes that we do need for the community.
So on the one hand, those building developments were kind of pushed aside, and there was quite a lot of consultation around that,
yeah.
And there were certain plans, and then there was a competition,
yeah.
And then people were invited to look, and I remember it went on for months and months and months. But now I get the feeling that there's, in a sense, that's in a way back on the table. Am I not?
No, it's not. I think what we signaled when we came into office as a board. Was that we wanted to get all of those plans out and have a look at them, see if they are still pertinent, see if they can be upgraded to meet these growing needs, because I think the needs have actually changed quite considerably in the last 6 or 7 years.
Mm. In what way do you think they've changed?
That's just demand as much as anything else. The visitor industry is taking off. I think we've got something like, off the top of my head, 11... tour companies of one sort or another, all with buses wanting to go in and out of the keyhole, along with the taxis, the shuttles, the ordinary scheduled bus service. So, and it's kind of untenable, and it's also not necessarily the best presentation that we would like to have for the island as visitors come here. It doesn't really present a very good side to them. Visitors get off the boat. They're not quite sure where to go from there. If they hang around and go to the toilet, then they come out and find they've missed the bus.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate.
Well, it's very unfortunate. It's not just a bit unfortunate, it's very unfortunate. And so I think we just need to refresh our thinking around that whole area.
Yes, we'll have big signs with crossed legs or something on the ferry. Pee now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, but I suspect... there's possibly more working in conjunction with Fullers that they might do to inform people before they get off the ferry about how important it is if they want to catch a local bus service to do to be out there and doing exactly that.
So what you seem to be talking about essentially is upgrading that sort of area so that the tour buses can get in and out more easily, and so also that commuters can get in and out more easily.
Yeah, I think it's not as simple as that. That's the trouble. I think every time you look into it in any depth, you'll find that there are, you do one thing here and it has an effect there, which has an effect there. So the piecemeal approach is where we are right now. What we need is a systematic approach.
Mm. Okay, so what would that involve, a systematic approach?
Well, that's what we're starting to get. That's what we're starting to get. So they're doing a uses analysis just to see if they've got everybody down there and understand the problems down there. And then at the same time, Auckland Transport doing a traffic management plan, which hopefully will be rolled out even in the short term for this summer. But it's like everything else in council. One of the things that should be underpinning it is money.
Mm.
So we've got these various options and various plans to look at and things that we might like to do. But there also needs to be money behind it. And I'm quite anxious that while council in these various guises and various departments and CCOs who are involved are going away thinking about what they're thinking about, I wanted to make sure the community had its say and start at the beginning and not be told something is like, here's a plan.
Mm.
Now what do you think? I think it's really important, and I was really gratified to see that the Auckland Council Properties and Auckland Transport both sent representatives to the Martyr conversation we had.
Mm.
Also, I was really gratified that people from the public, as I'd asked, if they felt they had something to say, were, you know, either emailed me if they couldn't be there and I presented their issues to the conversation, or they came themselves.
Mm.
And I think you were there yourself, and I think that's fantastic. You know,
yeah, no, it seemed
we
like
have
quite
very representative. I think it was representative. You know, I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
But this is just the first stage. It's just the first stage. I just wanted to make sure that the CCOs in particular were aware of all the community concerns, because it's easy for them to sit over in Auckland with pieces of paper and not really be aware of what's going on
definitely.
On the ground.
It was great that Auckland Transport was there.
Yeah.
It was great that Property Services were there. It was kind of a shame, I think, that Forest and Bird weren't there, because they, you know, they do have that whole hillside.
Yeah,
that's why
I went to some trouble to say in articles in the paper beforehand that we're not in, you know, if I have missed anybody out, I'm sorry.
Mm.
But you know, all you have to do is put your hand up, and you'll be in. You know, you know, please come along.
Yeah,
and in fact, it worked really well.
Initial meeting, isn't it? So what's going on from there? So you had a meeting. We sort of all thought about some of the issues that we think around Matiatia.
Yeah.
We made short-term plans, medium-term plans, mm-hmm. you know, long-term plans off the top of our heads.
I mean,
it's not that we thought about them before.
Absolutely.
So what's the next step?
Well, that's a good question, because that's a question we've just asked ourselves, and we've just had a board meeting on Thursday where we've passed a resolution to ask those two organised CCOs where to from here. We can collect the information is being collated, and I've sent a preliminary draft back to them of what went on there. But we need a bit of guidance from them. And it was encouraging again to see that Auckland Council Properties manager was there at our board meeting and made a commitment to looking at that for us and keeping us informed of the process.
Mm.
But we've just formalised it rather more by saying, yes, we really want to know what's going on from here on end.
Is there going to be a working party? Because someone, I think you...
Yeah, I think
party.
It might be a very good way to go forward. But I would need to know exactly where they are with all this, having when they get all our information, and see where they want to take things. And then see if a working party is the appropriate way to go. I've had a very good response to that. I really have. It's
so what's the relationship between the local board, the working party, and then the Waiheke public?
It's a wee bit like council itself, as I was saying at the beginning. We're sort of making it up as we go along. I just want to ensure that the community has got its say and input at each stage.
Mm.
That's my anxiety.
Okay, so the idea is that if there was a working party, that the community would have a say through the working party, or would the findings of the working party then feed back?
I'm honestly not sure, Sharon. I'll be frank with you. I'm just, as I say, trying to do it on the hop.
Mm.
I thought that rather than keep convening meetings of 30-odd people, it might be a bit cumbersome. But that still might be a better way to go.
Mm.
And that's why we need some guidance now from Auckland Council Properties and from Auckland Transport to see how they see it going from here.
Mm.
You know, is this... this was all supposed to feed into them, and I'm sure it will. But they, I think we need a bit, little bit of guidance from them for our next step.
Mm. Okay. And then... because the other issue around Matiati, of course, that's what I'm a little bit confused about, is that, you know, 80% of people said they didn't want development down at Matiati.
Yeah, that's right.
And so there's one thing around facilitating access to transport operators, yeah, and making it easier for commuters.
Yeah.
But then there's another thing around property services, building,
yeah,
things.
Yeah, well, under the district plan, they are certainly perfectly entitled to do that. So, as I said at the beginning, they've got they're charged with making the best use of that asset from a ratepayer and taxpayer point of view. So they have to make the best use of the asset. My concern is that we don't lose sight of the fact that that is our lifeline to the city.
Mm.
That's my concern.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
And I do have concerns. I think I had concerns when I saw the plans as they were under the Auckland City Council. So I just want to keep my finger on
your
that particular
open.
Yeah, yeah, finger, yeah, on that particular pulse, yeah, to see where it is going. But they will come back. I mean, this is only the first stage.
Mm.
You know, they will come back and back.
Because there definitely seems an issue. I mean, it seems to me that if you retweaked some of that parking and increased the price of the you know, commuter parking, or moved some of it up the hill, it would free up some of that parking for people who are travelling every day, or, you know, travelling.
I think you're quite right, Sharon. There are short term solutions which would be beneficial, and that might be what we can do right now. And that's really the urgent part of it: is what can we do right now to alleviate that problem, stop people going, you know, got appointments in hospital, missing their appointments because they can't get a car park to get on the ferry.
Oh,
I mean, it's just,
yeah,
insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, I know occasionally I've been, you know, trying to drop my kids at school and then get on the ferry, and then, in, you know, it's been,
yeah,
oh my God, there's no spot, and
yeah,
then I've got to park up the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact,
yeah,
the parking wardens were really nice. I parked in 30-minute parking once and left a note in the window right down the end of 30-minute parking, and they were very sweet. They were like, yeah, yeah, that's fine.
But there's a thought that says we shouldn't be encouraging people to park cars down there.
Mm.
Perhaps a better solution might be to have shuttle buses. You probably saw that as a solution that was put in over and over again.
But you see, for me, those solutions are creating more problems than they're worth. I think if you had less, you know, less of the parking was stitched up for people who are weekenders and leave their cars parked there permanently, or just had like 48-hour parking rather than weeks and weeks and weeks, day and night, whenever they want, then you'd actually get rid of some of the problems that you've got.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
the matters were in train just before the Auckland Council formed, particularly to do with the Urapa down at Matiati, where the leased car park holders had to move from their area, and they moved very swiftly into the area owned by Auckland Council Properties and put it probably in an inappropriate place.
Mm.
So I think that, you know, that's just one of the things that needs looking at.
Yes.
The problem is those people have got leases now. They're legitimate leases.
I know. And it wasn't for lack of saying, I have to say, because I know they got lots of calls saying, you know, we don't want more leased parking down here. But anyway, and if there is leased parking, then at least pay an amount that reflects the fact there's a lease. You've got a lease on it. But anyway, right. So then the other issue then, of course, is the Esplanade.
Yes.
Which is, you know, quite contentious, I suppose, in some ways. So... Well, I guess the issue for me is that the Esplanade was, you know, people voted and they decided that 53% of the population wanted the Esplanade closed in an Auckland Council survey. 47% wanted it open. But nonetheless, it was 53 against 47. It is quite close. Thereafter, there was an annual plan and submissions to the annual plan. And almost half the submissions said they specifically didn't want the Esplanade sealed.
Mm.
That was last year.
Mm.
And as a result of that, the sealing of the Esplanade was taken out of the annual plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got issues around the Local Government Act, which suggests that if you're going to make major changes or upgrading or whatever of anything, that should be submissions driven, and this is going to cost $1.6 to $2 million. And so I guess my question is, why is it that the local board in the majority, and yourself included, voted against or voted for reopening the Esplanade and sealing it and making it road traffic worthy when it contravenes all of those other things?
Not sure about contravenes, but Auckland Transport now have the control of that asset. It belongs to a CCO. And if that CCO wanted, they could really do what they like down there. But we've said to them, well, give us some options, please. Do proper surveys, which they've done. And so then at our June board meeting, they presented those options to us. The first option was do nothing. That wasn't an option, actually. There were five things altogether, three of which were options, two of the things that they simply said they couldn't countenance. And the first thing they said they couldn't countenance was leaving it as it was. It's becoming even more unsafe, and very soon, nobody, the fact of the matter is, if we do nothing, nobody will be able to use the Esplanade. So that wasn't an option for them, so that wasn't even on the table. The next thing they considered was spending $1.8 million just to upgrade it for walkers and cyclists. But they too have their guidelines, and they have to think about taxpayers' and ratepayers' money, and there was no way that they could justify a spend of $1.8 million on the Esplanade for just a few people. They are charged with looking after the interests of all road users. So they couldn't even begin to countenance that as an option because it didn't meet two things. One, that they have to look after all road users and use money effectively for them. And secondly, that it's an escape route. If the main Ocean View Road, between really Burrell Road and Little Oneiroa, it has a slip on it, and therefore with no emergency road. So they have to keep that road open for the other great reason of resilience. So they felt, even consider spending $1.86 million of ratepayers' money on walkers and cyclists alone. So then they did present us with three options. Option A, which I think was, if I'm trying to remember, was a super-duper all-singing, all-dancing option, $6.5 million. Well, there was no way we were going to approve that. I mean, that meant that not only was the road upgraded, that there were separate pathways for cyclists, separate pathways for walkers, two-way roads, widening of the road, all kinds of issues, which bumped the price up to $6.5 million. So that was option A. Option B was a one-way road, but that, funnily enough, with a shared path for cyclists and walkers. They didn't feel that that was particularly a good option either because it didn't meet the road safety requirements that they are required to look at. And I think that one came in at $2.5 million. And then there was a third option of $2 million, which was a shared use. Now, the shared use idea is really being trialled all over the country, and particularly in Auckland at the moment. And it looks like a really great concept. I know Tom Ransom has come before us a couple of times, actually, pushing the shared use. We think it's a great option because everybody would be... The whole thing about the shared use is safety. We have to have speed limits of between 10 and 30 kilometres an hour. So very slow. Mm. And, you know, we will have input into that. It has to be made safe so that vehicles can not only be slow but pass one another relatively easily, and that cyclists and walkers can feel safe, and horse riders. Mm. So it's a challenge.
What's the width of that road? What would the width of that road be?
I've got all the plans here, and I could tell you, but I'm not.
No. I was sitting with a bucket load of papers.
The whole point with that one was that they didn't have to widen the road significantly. Mm. I think there might be a couple of places where they had to shore it up, but they didn't have to widen it. But it did mean all users could use it. Mm. And the big issue, even for us too, is safety. So we the A, B and C options, the local board decided by a 3-2 majority to go for option C, which is about $2 million.
And I think the point is that all of the options that were put by Auckland Transport, and maybe that's right, it's because Auckland Transport basically look for all ways of allowing cars to go wherever they want.
It's a different matter in some ways. They, to get the best value for money, they have a policy of doing work that attracts NZTA subsidies. The only real option that attracted an NZTA subsidy was option C.
I see. So it was around attracting a subsidy.
It is.
Okay. Nonetheless,
I was going to say, this, as I was trying to say before, it all comes down to money. Where's the money? And how can we get it? And how can we leverage and get the maximum for everybody? You know, it reminds me of the old John Stuart Mill utilitarian concept of the greatest good to the greatest number. And this is the way that they feel. And we support them in that, that this is the greatest good to the greatest number.
Indeed, and that's always a useful thing to be driven by. Having said that, the community did say that they wanted the road closed to traffic, and Auckland Transport are driven by the desire to open roads and possibly funded through NZTA. But there was space for the board to say, actually, the community have said they don't want to seal this. We've taken it out of our annual plan. The local government Act says that in terms of our long-term planning, we need to make sure that things are funded on the basis of what people are submitting to us on, and they're not submitting to us on this area. We've got three initiatives which are travel-wise, walks around Waiheke and cycle lanes around Waiheke, all of which are dependent on having that road closed to traffic.
I don't think that's strictly true, Sharon. The travel-wise program doesn't go as far as the Esplanade. It looks much closer to the actual schools.
Nonetheless, there are a lot of there are in fact more children cycling from Blackpool across the Esplanade than there are cycling across the road in Surfdale.
Well, it should be any different. They should be just, in fact, if anything, it should be safer for them to go along the shared road, and it would make a magnificent.
Why would it be safer for them to go along a shared road?
Because everything will be put in place to make it safe.
But nonetheless, in terms of democratic process, if people have actually gone to the trouble of submitting to say that they don't want this road sealed, and it's taken out of the annual plan, why is the decision made?
I think you're confusing between sealed. I think you're a bit confused between sealed and opening the road. Sealing means, in Auckland Transport terms, putting tarmac on the road.
Okay. Yeah.
So we wanted it sealed because of the danger of the damage, really, that it's doing to the Hauraki Gulf. Sealing the runoff from the Esplanade into the Gulf can be quite horrendous at times.
Right.
And sealing is a way of trying to protect the Gulf. So that's why we were looking at sealing. Yes, there were a lot of submissions that saying don't seal it. No matter what else you do, don't seal it. So, you know, we listen and we took that out. So sealing is still not part of this option.
Lovely.
So it's not that the road will be a nice tarmac. It'll be the same sort of road that we've got now, only there will be enough on there to inform people about keeping slow, making sure you're looking out for the more vulnerable road user. And I think we will have a wonderful asset that we can really be proud of, and being at leading edge, actually, of tourism trails.
Although tourism trails, I mean, one of the reasons it didn't get the cycle way around Waiheke didn't get that funding was that we didn't have enough places like the Esplanade that were for cycles.
I think the real issue was found not getting in the first round was that most of those tourist routes are off-road routes. So what we're looking at now, because that's still on the table, are more tourist routes. The government has said, okay, there are some places that can't meet the off-road criteria, but maybe there is room there for another level, if you like, which is tourist routes. And we're just looking at that now. We've had a workshop on it, so we're just looking at that. They've done a set. We asked some months ago for a safety assessment of the routes. which we've now cited, and they're waiting for our feedback on that, but we haven't actually sent the feedback to them yet.
Now, are you expecting to ask Auckland Transport more questions around this whole thing? Because the other thing, and I don't know anything about roading, as has been made blatantly clear by what you've just said around the ceiling issue, is that it seems really strange that something would be safe for cyclists and pedestrians and cost $1.8 million, but then also safe for cars, which requires widening it much greater.
I don't think it's actually a question of widening. I think what you're really going to have a sort of basically like it's been on the Esplanade with cars coming. You have to go slow along there. I know some people don't, but you know they're just that's maniacal driving. But you have to go, and it's better to have two way than one way because in safety terms, if it's one way, it encourages them to go faster.
Mm.
And again, Tom Ransom came and presented to us on this, showed us a lovely video of a shared space, I think, I can't remember where it was now, somewhere on the continental Europe anyway, where there was no informative signage, actually, nothing. Mm. People came to a big intersection, a busy intersection, and had to make their own way across it, whether they were cars, pedestrians,
that
cyclists.
Sounds like India.
Well, but the big thing about that, and the thing that makes it work, is education.
Yeah.
So there would have to be, along with this, an education campaign.
Yes. Nonetheless, when you go down the Esplanade, there are parts of it which would not be able to fit two lanes of traffic and a cycleway, and you would have to widen that.
Yeah, it's not a cycleway. It's a complete, the whole road, imagine the whole road as not delineated.
I see.
The whole road is a shared space. Pedestrians, cyclists, horse riders, dog walkers, cars, all sharing that space.
Right, so you're thinking somewhere like the bottom of Queen Street, those
yeah,
areas
there. There are a few now in up and down Queen Street. Derby Street's an example. And it's working very well, so I understand.
Yeah, I don't know that I would let an 8 or 9-year-old child cycle alone down two-way traffic, which is a free-for-all shared space, though.
It is working, Sharon, actually. And I keep referring back to Tom because he's presented us with a lot of data on this, and it seems that. I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it?
Mm.
It seems that if people generally have to look after each other, that they will actually behave very well.
Mm. It's also around perceptions, though, and I think you know, having a space that everyone's got a free-for-all, that's in a place that's unsupervised in the sense that there's not houses on that road looking to see what's happening, it's also a potential for danger. I mean, I don't know.
This won't go ahead unless we can be absolutely assured that all the safety elements that need to be there are there.
Are you planning to ask more questions around the costing? Because there seem to be issues around the cliff and maintaining the cliff, which haven't been taken into
account.
These
were just
I think people want it open. That's one form or another. They don't want to abandon it.
Well, I think it's either lose it completely, because the other option of not doing anything at all, that the road will be lost to cyclists, to walkers, to riders, anybody.
Absolutely. And I don't think anyone wants that solution.
Exactly. That's not a solution.
The point is that the costing does seem a little bit out the window to say, look, to maintain it, we can do 1.8 million, no cars, but suddenly 2 million, we can put cars in there. So it seems
the extra cost, the 200,000, is in safety measures.
Right. Okay. So then why wasn't a decision made at the board meeting to say, okay, which was basically, I think, Paul's suggestion, that we maintain it to the minimum for everyone, and then we have some sort of consultation around what kind of safety measures, or whether we do now want to open it to traffic?
Well, what we said in our resolution was that we would have a working party, two members of Cycle Action on that party, the horse riders are represented. I looked at it just before I came out, and I'm not sure that we specifically said walkers, funnily enough, but then all the local board members will also be on the panel.
Mm.
So it's a very comprehensive panel, and everybody will be represented. And absolutely, Auckland Transport don't want it to be unsafe for anybody.
Mm.
They really don't. Why would they? And neither do we. But I do believe from a ratepayer point of view, and a costing point of view, this was the best option.
Mm. Okay, lovely. And I guess the last thing is, what is the point of making submissions? I mean, that's what I feel, because I do feel that it was nice to just have it as a space, you know, one space on the island where, you know, cyclists can ride next to each other. And, you know, I am seeing the volume of kids going to school along that road.
Mm.
And a lot of people did submit against opening it to cars and sealing the road and all of that. And yet, in one decision of the board, it supported an Auckland Transport Initiative to open it to cars. So I'm just wondering.
We had submissions all through the year, for not only in the formal process that you've just outlined, but in many board meetings, with submitters coming to us saying they want that road open to vehicular traffic. So we've had submitters on both sides, and considerable numbers of them on both sides, which reflects, of course, the sort of split that you saw in the vote.
No, that's
which
fair
is
enough,
fairly
and
even.
And I understand that there were votes on both sides, but nonetheless, there were certain significant kinds of votes which suggest that people wanted it closed. And so is that completely
If they want it closed, it goes into the sea.
Mm. Well, not necessarily, because...
Oh, I think so, because Auckland Transport are the only people who've really got any money at all.
Right,
and
so
parks,
you're saying that
parks,
it's a financial initiative and it has to be supported through New Zealand Transport.
Yeah, not just that, though. I mean, nobody else has the budgets that Auckland Transport has.
Okay.
Think about the hillside of the Esplanade, where rocks are already falling down.
Mm.
It's being undercut underneath the platform, the sea wall. Those are big bickies.
Mm.
Parks doesn't have that kind of money. The only people with that kind of money to fix the Esplanade for usage is Auckland Transport, and they're driven by their own needs, if you
I
like.
See. Okay.
And we you know, they could completely ignore us anyway. That's actually the reality of life. They won't, because local boards now. Beginning to have more and more say, as they should have always had. And that's been a struggle over the first 18 months, is getting your say, making Auckland Transport understand that it's better to work with the boards than against the boards. And we've got a good relationship now with Auckland Transport.
And I guess my last question is, I mean, I think people in Waiheke realise that there isn't a bottomless pit of money, you know, but I guess what we were wondering is, how can the board assume more control over the way money is spent? So, for example, you know, we're not a big place. We realise that some things are going to be taxpayer dependent. But how can we say, look, you know, given the pool of money we don't want roads to be improved. We want a swimming pool, or we want...
You can't. The short answer is you can't. The money tends to be siloed. So Auckland Transport themselves have the largest part of council budget for transport needs, and then the money's siloed into various areas. Swimming pools is one area, public parks is another area, libraries are another area. So it's not just as easy as saying, well, we'll take some money from there, not from there, because we don't have control of those main budgets. You know, we don't actually have much control over any budget, to be perfectly honest with you. However, having said that, one of the things we've managed to do as local boards is get more money to spend locally than the previous community boards had, for example. And Waiheke has done very well so far out of the super city.
Great.
Well, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the reasons, I suppose, why I feel so enthusiastic now, a year and a half on, that we are making progress. Because we've got a bit more money, we've got a bit more say over what we can do here for ourselves on the island to keep us our unique character. But
and
it's
I think
only
the
bits
other
of
issue
money.
Is it's good that we get a pile of money, because we actually support Auckland Tourism to
Absolutely.
A huge extent, and you know, we get a lot of their summer traffic. So to say that it's only dependent on the taxes we pay, or the money we get is dependent on the taxes
we make this point every single time we go and present to the governing body. Local board presents reasonably frequently when we're doing plans and agreements. We present every single time on that and say, this is not a place of 8,500 people. This is a place where we need an infrastructure that supports 35,000 people. And I think they're beginning to hear us.
Yeah, lovely. Good. Jo, thank you so much for coming in.
Finished?
I really appreciate you coming in and you know, talking on Waiheke.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, Sharon.
Yeah,
it's really great.
And it's really interesting to get some different perspectives on things
course.
To hear what you're saying, and, you know, really I appreciate it. Great.
Thank you very much indeed, Sharon.
So you have a lovely day.
And you
enjoy
the rest of your day too.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Right, well, it's Island Life, Saturday morning. Hello, everyone. And today, first up, already here, is Graham from Waiheke Navy. Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Great. Okay, so the exciting thing about Graham is he set up a ferry service that works at weekends. And very recently, I think you've put something on a website, is that right?
Yeah, we've now got a website, waihekenavy.co.nz, where all the details of what we're doing will be, and we'd like everyone to have a look.
Lovely. So what is it that you're doing?
Right. Basically, a bit of a long story, but basically I run a tour company here on Waiheke Island, and over the last summer we had over 3,500 people do our tour, and that's a lot of ferry rides. And I approached the operators of the ferry and said, look, I'm bringing all these people over here, I'd like to work something out. And they were unable to come to the party with anything, so I thought, well, I'll do my own thing. So I'm going to be chartering a ferry and bringing people over. Initially, it'll be in the spring on Saturdays, maybe Sundays, maybe a day during the week. And then as we get into the summer, we could get up to 6 days a week. So the tourists are going to come over on the ferry, but it has to go back to Auckland, and that's an opportunity to let locals travel back to Auckland for basically a $10 ferry ride.
Right. Okay. So basically, it's not set up yet. You had one sort of experimental go.
We've had a couple
of
trials.
Right.
It went well, and all other things being equal, we will be having our first sailing on September the 1st.
Okay. Lovely. Good. So you're really kind of starting to publicise that and see how it's going to work. Now, I had a look at the website, and one of the things for me is that I was just wondering how it would work in practice, because you can't pre-book the seats, can you?
No.
Or is that something that will happen?
Yeah, the point we need to make, this is not a public service. It's a membership-based venture, because we're not offering a regulated public service with a regular timetable. That's a whole different regime, and we're not in a position to do that at the moment. But what we'll do is we'll depart a little bit earlier than the other ferry, and we will have approximately 45 seats on our ferry. And if it was to fill up, and I'm not convinced that's going to happen straight away, people will have the option of going on the regular ferry. So nobody's going to miss out. You'll still get to go to town. You might miss out on the opportunity of doing it for $10, but people will still get a service, which is the important thing.
Okay, lovely. So what you're suggesting is that maybe people have sort of a 10 ticket ride to you. If they miss that and it's going to be leaving, say, 10 minutes before the hour or quarter to, then if they miss that, they can still get on the regular Fuller's service.
Yep. Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And would probably arrive at about the same time, because your ferry is 45 minutes and their ferry is 35 minutes.
Yeah. Our travel times are very similar. In fact, our ferry can go, on one of our sailings, we actually overtook the other ferry, and it was quite great standing on the back of the ferry, waving goodbye to everybody.
Yeah.
But no, for operational reasons, it'll be a similar timing. But the embarking and disembarking will be much, much quicker.
Right.
So, as we know, you know, coming off the big boat, there's a bit of a scrum, and there's all those guys holding up signs, me included often. This will be a lot more simpler, and you can just step straight off. So,
right. And where are you going to be docking?
We'll be going from the what's officially called Gate 3, which is the old Matiatia Wharf, and we'll be going from there. So really, in terms of convenience...
Right, so it's the next one over that doesn't have any shelter on it, that one?
Well, it's got a little covered walkway thing, but yeah.
Yes, okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay,
but it's not basically sharing the same wharf.
No, and the other plus is that we won't be going at the same time as the big ferry, and you won't have all that parking issues and things and the scrum that's down there, so it'll sort of actually take a little bit of the pressure off the existing terminal.
Okay, right, lovely. And so what sailings do you anticipate then? One on a...
At this stage, it'll be Saturdays, probably leaving about quarter to 11, arriving downtown about 11:30, excuse me, and we imagine we'll have a return trip about 4 p.m., getting back about quarter to 5. That's the sort of plan at the stage.
Okay, on a Saturday and a Sunday?
Saturday to start with, Sunday if we get the bookings. And from time to time I get groups that want to come over. And if I was to have a group say midweek, I would then advertise the fact that we're running a sailing during the week, right. Which is why we need people to register, so we've got a database so we can text and email them each week what the sailings will be.
Right, okay. So is there a way of registering? Because, I mean, you know, on one level, how much is a 10-ticket trip?
10-trip ticket is $85.
Right.
5-trip, $45.
Lovely. So, in a sense, I mean, I think people want to support you, and they are also interested in cheap fares. At the same time, they want to know that you know, they are going to be able to get on the ferries, and the ferries are going to work, and they want to find out a little bit more about it before committing. So
sure.
I noticed you've got a membership. So would it be useful for people to just join as members so that you've got a database without buying any tickets? Is that possible?
Well,
so they can see how it all works, or not really?
Look, we're charging $10 for the membership because we're going to have a very attractive card, plastic card printed up with a, you know, which got a cost, and setting the whole thing up and running the database. And also, I think people should never have anything for nothing. So, and the other thing is, I do want a commitment from people. If people support this, there is the possibility long term that we can end up with an alternative ferry service. So, really, there's a lot of grumbling on this island. What I'm saying to people is that for $10, you can put your money where your mouth is. It's not a lot of money. And if you don't want to do that, well, you can have a 5-trip ticket for $45, and I won't charge you the $10.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that if people get a 5-trip ticket, they wouldn't be charged the membership?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So in a sense, you're taking a risk for $45, but then on the other hand, you've got a certain number of tickets that you will be able to use from September the 1st.
Yeah, and we'll have an idea of what the response is. Because I would point out that the big company takes $460 off people for a 40-trip ticket. No one seems to blink over that one.
No, that's true. At the same time, they, you know, they're also in the system, so they run so many ferries a week.
Look, I agree.
You know,
I'm being
facetious. No, all of that is the case. And the other issue, of course, is that really, it's only really going to be viable for people who are occasional travellers.
Yeah, look, it's not a commuter service at this stage. It's the market for the ferry is the commuters who often have their monthly ticket. There's people with the next step down, I guess, is your 40-trip ticket. And there are a lot of people that work from home, only go to town a couple of days a week, don't have to go in early, maybe have a part-time job on a Saturday, and they might have their 40-trip ticket. Now, basically, a return... It's $23 return on the 40-trip ticket. Mm. What we're saying is that, you know, we can get that down to 17 with us. So use that clip with us and come back with the big company and use your other clip with them.
Right. So it's like it's working as another resource.
Yeah.
And it does seem that your target is going to be mothers with children taking them to the swimming pool, or people going in to run an errand, or, you know, that kind of thing, rather than necessarily people who've got a business meeting at, you know.
Yeah, sure. And look, I'm really conscious that the cost of the ferry for some people on Waiheke is an issue. They'd like to go to town more often, but frankly, they can't afford it. The other the family tickets, the big ferry, a family ticket is $89,
right,
which is quite a lot of money for a family to stump up. So we're looking at, I think it's 2 adults and 3 children, $25. We won't have a return ticket on that. And if you've got one child and it's 2 tens, well, there's no point in you buying it.
Right, so you're looking at $25 as against $89.
Well, no, so no, in fairness, that return ticket would be 50, so against 89.
Right, yeah. Okay, lovely. But that might well suit some people, and look, and what happens, because that's the other thing, you know, people are like, okay, I want to support you, and I'm putting out $50, and how is that going to, I mean, are they guaranteed that they will be able to get... You know, that this is going to be up and running throughout until, say, next summer, so that between they get the ticket to the end of January, that they, you know, that they will be able to get on a ferry sailing? Or, you know, is there a chance that, you know, you get all the money, you run it for 4 weeks, and then it's like, okay, well, sorry, it's just not working for us?
Now, look, I think that's an important question you ask. This is an ancillary to bringing tourists over for my tour business. I have the numbers coming already. In fact, I expect to do a little bit less business than I have last year because I'm changing the focus of the business. But I already have the tourists coming to Waiheke. So the numbers are already there to charter the boat. The bonus is that the boats will be returning to Auckland and we can take the locals. The success of the business isn't dependent on the locals. And frankly, with the pricing I've done, I'm not going to be making much out of the locals. So the success of my charters won't be dependent on the locals.
Right. Okay. Lovely. Great. And are you combining with other tour operators as well who found themselves in a similar situation?
Look, I'm chatting to other people. I haven't got anything in place at this stage. I think everyone wants to see how I go, which is fair enough. And the other thing is I'd like to talk to venues because you know, they've got groups coming over. I can do charters for them. And I think that as the thing builds up and people build up confidence, we'll run more and more. So it's one of those things that I feel. And I do want to make it very clear that we are starting off small and I'm not making huge promises.
Right. No, you're not making huge promises, but you are making promises that if people get a 5-ticket ferry thing, then sometime between September and January, they would be able to, you know, get a ticket to and from Waiheke.
Yeah, look, I imagine we'll be running at least through till Easter. And if you've got to Easter and you haven't used your 5 clips, come and have a chat with me and we'll work something out.
Right, okay. Right, so it is a long-term thing that you're setting up. Yeah, lovely. Okay, look, thank you so much for coming in. You know, I wish you all the best. Having been in the campaign for Fair Ferries, I know that Fuller's have an incredibly aggressive policy towards competition. And so I do wish you all the very best. And I'd be quite interested to see if they suddenly find a way of offering, negotiating deals with other tour operators to make it easier for them to bring people over.
Look, I agree.
It's great that you've got an independent kind of thing that's dependent on your business rather than their business to make it work.
Oh, sure. And look, if Fuller's were to decide to take me on and offer everybody $10 ferry tickets, I'd gracefully withdraw and hold them to it. So, and by the way, while we're here, I'd like to give away a 5-trip ticket to somebody.
Great.
Now, let's keep this simple, shall we? Our email address is info@aroundwaihikitours.co.nz. I haven't got the info@Waiheke Navy up and running, but shall we make it the fifth email? If people want to email me, they can go and the fifth person in will win a 5-trip ticket, free membership of the Waiheke Navy. We might make them scrub the decks. They'll be registered. And the beauty of that is that we can then advise them when we're travelling.
Lovely. So you're encouraging people to buy either a ticket or a membership so that they're on the database.
Yeah, sure. Look, I don't want to take $10 off people. I want to offer them some value for their $10. Mm. But I do want people to register and I do want them to make a commitment. So that's why we're offering that if you buy the 5-trip or the 10-trip ticket, we won't charge the membership. This isn't about getting money off people. It's about getting a database.
Lovely. Great. Good. Lovely. Well, all the best for that. Thank you very much for coming in. That was Graham from Waiheke Navy. And what's the name of your tour company?
Around Waiheke Tours.
Around Waiheke Tours. Lovely. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Lovely.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.